Welcome to Kick Back with Chris. Kick Back with Chris, the martial arts podcast.
Brought to you by Martialytics.
Easy to use. Super powerful management software for your martial arts school.
Hey everybody, so little intro to this one today. Earlier on I had the opportunity to sit down for a conversation with the martial arts legend that is Mr. Steve Rowe. It was an opportunity for me to geek out a little bit, if I'm honest, to revisit the younger me, the searching out for all of the books martial arts lover that I was, and you know, pre-internet, you know, where all you could get really was what you saw on TV in the movies or on the occasional documentary, or what you could find down the library or the W.H. Smith's in book format. This was, you know, it's a little bit self-indulgent, if I'm honest. You know, it was a little bit less about the podcast than more about me just squeezing information out of somebody that is so experienced, being around the block, being there and done it. Anyway, enough about that. I'm going to get straight into the, I won't say interview, it was a conversation with Mr. Steve Rowe, and I'll catch up with you on the other side.
Brought to you by SGC Security Services. Excellence as standard.
Okay, guys, so joining me this week, I have somebody that I like to refer to and consider as martial arts royalty, Mr. Steve Rowe. How are you doing, sir?
I'm okay, thank you.
Well, you are, really. I mean, crikey, I mean, I remember seeing you in magazines, I've seen you on interviews and events, teaching, and actually, though, funnily enough, at all the different events that I've been to, I don't think we've ever actually sat down for a chat. It's just the way it works, because when I go to martial arts events, there's so many people, And I just feel a little bit like everybody wants a bit of everybody's time. And I'm a bit of a weirdo in that I try to be that person that doesn't do that to everybody else.
Yeah.
I'm a nightmare for that. Like events and things that I've been to in the past, like the only person I've ever had a picture with is Donny Osmond for my mum. Because she loves Donny Osmond and he was there. And I thought, I can't not take a picture with Donny Osmond. Anyway, enough about that weirdness. How are you doing?
Yeah, I think all things considered, I've got over a load of stuff, so I'm fine.
I know. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that a little bit later on. But it's a bit of a cliched start, but it is at the end of the day, this is a martial arts podcast, and as much as I do like talking a little bit of nonsense, I always like to start with martial arts as the core of the conversation, and the reason why I get people on. And your martial arts experience is immense, I think it's fair to say. You know, teaching and training all around the world, a plethora of you know, really experienced and big instructors, and then of course yourself with associations and developing systems. I could probably give you 4 hours on this podcast and that not be enough. So if it's even possible, in a nutshell, for our listeners who perhaps don't know about your work, how would you describe yourself as Steve Rowe, the martial artist, if you had to encapsulate it?
I don't know, really.
It's difficult.
Yeah, I mean, you said royalty. I'll accept that.
It's true. I, you know, when I hear your name, when I see you, I think of all the experience that you've had and all the experiences in life that you've had. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to big you up too much because it'll get awkward.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I think the only reason that I've been in martial arts so long is I couldn't think of anything else to do. And
I
kind of forgot to stop training. It's just something that I've done all of the time. And I think really everything in my life has just grown out of that.
Yeah, it has. Well, was there any particular reason for getting into martial arts in the first place, or was it just something that you happened to land in?
Yeah, I, without going too much into childhood, I was a typical South London kid. I was completely uneducated. I really was a little street kid, and thankfully I didn't end up in juvie or prison or whatever, but I didn't really go to school, but when I left school as such, I had loads and loads of different jobs because I hadn't got any qualifications or anything like that.
Yeah.
But in the end, I ended up in the fire brigade.
Oh, wow.
This was in 1969. And I came out of the fire brigade 3 years later and kind of drifted into the security world.
Right.
So working at the sharp end of security, the way that I came into security is very different to a lot of other people. I ended up doing absolutely everything from carrying valuables to bodyguarding to working on the door to concerts, all that kind of stuff. But I rose up through the security world to become operations manager of quite a large firm. I had about 500 staff.
Wow.
And so working in the security world, my brother had started karate, 1963, and he'd done some Tai Chi and so on. He trained with like Steve Morris and George Andrews, all those sort of people. So I ended up doing karate really totally from a self-defense point of view,
sure,
because of the job that I was doing. And I picked a club for that as well. You know, my instructor at the time was a kind of ex-army boxer, drifted into karate. It was a very street type club at the time. Yeah. And that was how I got into it. But to sort of try and cut the longest story short, my story's out there in a lot of different places, mm-hmm. so we don't need to say too much. But even doing that kind of karate, I reached the point where I realised that I was way too angry, I was way too violent,
sure,
and I knew that I was on a road to prison or destruction. And so therefore, it was when Kung Fu came on the telly, basically. And I looked at the Shaolin Temple and David Carradine. What a great character, you know.
Mm.
And that really caught me, you know. That when I watched even that first episode of Kung Fu, I was like, that's what I need. That's what I want.
Wow.
And I went out to find my first Tai Chi instructor then. I think it was about 1973, something like that.
That can't have been easy.
No. Well, funnily enough, you know, they say when the student's ready, the master comes along. Somehow I always seem to have almost accidentally fallen into train with just the right people at just the right time. And the guy that I started training with is a guy called Simon Wyatt. And in those days, he was a hippie, open-toed sandals, long hair. You know, I was the equivalent of a 1960s street urchin mod from
just
the modern rock of battles and, you know, working in security.
That's like a film story. Yeah, you can imagine characters now.
But he was really good. And I used to go in early and push hands with him and we had some good conversations. And he gave me my first copy of the Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu. And that was the first book I ever read in my life.
Crikey. But that's a good one to start on.
Yeah, but the moment I started reading it, I understood it. It bit home. And I think I'm neurologically divergent, which is why I didn't get on at school. I didn't get on with my family. I didn't get on with anyone.
You're describing me here now.
Yeah.
And a lot of martial artists, probably.
And the way that I grew up was if you didn't get on with someone, you give them a slap, you know. So I think because I'm that way, the moment I read the Tao Te Ching, because I'm very right-brained, I could get it straight away. I've said to loads of people since, read this, and they go, don't understand it. And I can't understand why they can't understand it, because it's so simple. When I eventually took an IQ test, I'm in the top 1%.
Wow. Okay. Well,
so I had a very high IQ. I was very intelligent, but that was working against me because it kind of gave, I had like ADHD, I had too much energy, nowhere to put it, didn't know what to do, didn't get on with anyone. I think I pissed absolutely everybody off. That was the big transformation for me. So even doing karate in the first instance probably didn't do me that much good, but it did get me into martial arts and got me to watch Kung Fu. Mm. And it was the Shaolin Temple. And, of course, that led me straight away into studying Taoism, Buddhism, Zen, anything to do with meditation, because I realized that through meditation, I could calm down the body, I could calm the emotions, I could calm the mind. You know, and the Asian philosophy, particularly in Taoism and Buddhism, is one that I could take to straight away.
Amazing. So, yeah, you, obviously you mentioned being a firefighter and working in security, you know, first before the martial arts. And both, I mean, they're both very high-pressure environments.
Yeah.
Like, incredibly high-pressure environments. So, I tend to find people, it's the other way around. They start in the martial arts, they find that helps them to develop that confidence and that ability to cope under pressure, and then they go into something else. So to, you know, to do it the other way around, that's really interesting. So do you remember walking into your first class and what that felt like? Was it exciting? Was it nervous? Was it a test? Did you have that combative feeling straight away? How did you feel?
It was Greenwich. It was Greenwich in South London. Mm. My first teacher was a guy called Jim Fewins.
Yeah.
And I could remember sort of queuing up to go in. It was an Irishman's working club. Mm. And I felt quite at home, to be honest.
Right.
But it was very violent.
Yeah.
But I was used to violence, and I actually got knocked out on my first training session.
And that was a positive experience. Was that what you were expecting?
Well, I was used to it.
You were used to it, yeah.
To me, that all seemed normal. Mm. And in those days, it was full contact without gloves. It was very street. Mm. I was in hospital almost every week.
And first name basis with all the staff.
I always had black eyes, always had broken ribs. I was always, you know, couldn't laugh or breathe. And, you know, the list of injuries was endless. I had no surgery a few years back. When they pulled out all the wadding and that, you know, and I said to the consultant, I said, oh, man, I can actually breathe. And he said, I'm really pleased. He said, because your nose has been broken 5 times. He said, and I had one hell of a job to reset.
Oh, my goodness me. I mean, martial arts in those times it's a very different thing to what it is now in some respects. It sounds to me like, as deep as this is going to sound, you were sort of born at the right time to experience martial arts as it was then, because now it's not always, but it is a very different thing now. Now, looking back on it, It sounds to me anyway that you found it at the right time for you. But looking at it now from my point, I mean, I started in the 80s, and I'm thinking then in the late 1980s, we did some things then that you look at and go, my goodness, we should not. What were we doing that? But would I go back and change it? I don't know that I would. And I wondered if...
Yeah, there's the good and bad to it.
Yeah.
Really, when you look at it. So, yes, it trains spirit as such. But to be honest, I had that never give up type attitude from the start anyway. And I can remember quite often I'd go home with concussion. I can remember often sitting in my car and I couldn't even remember where I lived and things like that. My head felt like it was stuffed with cotton wool. I had so many injuries. I'd have to go to the hospital and so on. And quite often I'd be sitting at home thinking, why am I doing this? You know, this is crazy. But there was something inside of me that said, if you give up, you'll give up on everything.
Wow, that's deep. So with obviously, again, we you mentioned earlier on that a lot of people know a lot about your history and your training, but I'm interested in what point the transition happened from that very hard training that you're talking about there into finding Tai Chi and the softer side of things, because I think to many that for me anyway, the two align perfectly, but to a lot of people listening in, they might think, well, how do they fit together? You know, how does somebody that likes to sit in the car with a concussion, well, didn't like to, but would routinely visit hospital and train in that hard manner, find Tai Chi as being something that complements? To me, it works, but I think to a lot of people, they might think, well, how does that work?
I think it's because I knew I was on a road to nowhere. I'd been unhappy all of my life. I didn't know happiness in any shape or form.
Wow.
I was very unhappy. I didn't like anyone. I had to deal with everything with violence. or just being arrogant. And I didn't know any different. It was the way that I'd been brought up and the way that I'd kind of been indoctrinated, if you like.
Yeah.
And I knew I was on a road to know. There was something inside me that I was highly intelligent. And although nothing had fitted, I knew there had to be something else. When I saw that Shaolin Temple scenes, you know, that really got to me. And I've got to admit, when I went along to Tai Chi, I found Tai Chi harder than anything I'd ever done in my life. And moving slow. I mean, we used to go in the dojo. Kata would take about 5 minutes and then we'd beat the shit out of each other for the rest of the night, you know. So the whole idea of doing very, very slow form. And the place that I went to was an adult institute, but it was in like some kind of old manor house and we'd be out in the garden. And most of the other students were old ladies. So if you could imagine someone like me and trying to move slow along with these old ladies, it killed me. I found it so hard. I found it so difficult. But again, I realized that because I found it difficult, this is what I was lacking. I had no patience. I had no tolerance. I had no kindness. I had no compassion. I had no empathy. These were the things that I had to be able to develop. And you know, Tai Chi was the route that I could find.
Yeah, I remember it would be the late 1990s. So I would have been in my late teens, and I was all about training. So every day of the week, I had one day off on a Monday. But it was because one of my favorite TV shows, a Sammo Hung's TV show series called Martial Law, was on. Do you remember that? Yeah, and I had to watch that. I was like, no, I have to watch this. And that was the only reason I gave myself a day off, was to watch that. So I've been training all the time. And then one of the instructors mentioned they were starting up a Tai Chi class on a Friday evening at 6:30. And I remember thinking, oh, that's the thing that in all the movies that I like to watch, we see, I've got to go and have a bit of that. I've got to go and do that. That's going to be fantastic. And I remember going in and I remember standing and following, doing all the movements and just being ultra aware of my hands and feet being warm. That's the one thing I can always remember from it, the sensation of heat in my palms and feet, whether that was right or wrong or whatever. But I remember thinking, I don't understand this, but I have to keep going back and doing it again and again and again and again. And I trained for as long as the class was in existence. I think it was up until I actually started teaching full time, and that took over my life at the time. But it is always something I've always been interested in going back and revisiting again. And for me, again, it was the hook of it being in the, you know, oh, that's the thing that they're doing in the Jackie Chan films and the Jet Li films and Shaolin Temple movie. And I'm thinking, oh, I want to do that. That's the thing. I was hooked in by the coolness of it. But then it was my perceived coolness of it. Then it was I don't understand this. This is, I can feel the stuff. And the internet was in its infancy. So you couldn't go and watch videos. You could read lots of things and see pictures, but there wasn't really videos and things. So I was buying book after. In fact, I've still got them all now. Everything I could get my hands on, trying to learn more. But the more I read, the more I confused myself. So, when you mentioned, you know, that you found that thing, I kind of found something that I didn't really understood, and I've never really gotten back into it, and I need to. Talking to you now is inspiring me to.
I think that is the biggest problem, and it's the biggest problem with Tai Chi. Out of all of the martial arts, Tai Chi is probably the most misunderstood, and it contains the kind of the worst arrogant people. You've only got to go onto any Tai Chi page on the internet and they're all squabbling like little kids, you know.
Really?
So all the things that it should be, they aren't.
Right.
You could say the same for a lot of the other martial arts, I know, but karate and kung fu and that is bad enough. But just go and have a look at some of the Tai Chi pages. You will never see me write on any of those pages. I stay away from most other Tai Chi people, to be honest.
Wow. Is that a universal thing, or is that a little bit of a system culture clash? Because I know that we have a tendency of, how do I say it? westernizing, if that's the word to say, with martial arts. We tend to apply a lot of British thinking to something that's not typically, well, it's not a British thing, you know, and the two don't always kind of go together. Is that difference, because of cultural influence?
I think the art is to be able to translate it and structure it. And I'm very lucky because I do know a lot of people in the martial arts, so I'm not hiding off in a corner. If you look at my coaching programs that I run, there's over 100 people on those coaching programs at the moment. Yeah. And I'd say the majority of those are above fifth dan level in karate, kung fu, Krav Maga, Wing Chun, self-defense. You name the art, I guarantee I've got a few people on the program who are teaching it. You've kind of only got to look at the photographs and the list of names and you'll see people that you know fairly well that train with me. So in a way, I'm lucky because I can relate to most people, most senior martial arts people.
Yeah.
And I think my skill of being neurologically diverse is that I can hold a lot in my head at the same time.
Right.
So, you know, I've had some very good instruction in Tai Chi. And without a doubt, Jim Uglow was a big influence. He was he's a very good Kung Fu and Tai Chi person. And Ma Li Yang was a very good teacher in Hong Kong as well. So I was very lucky in the instruction that I had. And through Jim, I met most of the other instructors. So, you know, met with Chu Jin Soon and Ip Tai Tak and all those people in that Yang family lineage. When I looked at it, and I suppose taking together everything that I'd learned, obviously effectiveness was an important part of my life anyway. I can't see the purpose of doing anything that doesn't have a reason. Mm-hmm. So if I said to you, why am I doing that? And you said, I don't know, it's why I was told, that is not good enough for me. And if you gave me a reason that was too vague, it's not good enough. So right. I will go away and research absolutely everything. And if you talk to any of my students, they'll all tell you this, you know, everything I teach is in the classics. And I refer to the classics constantly. Mm. But what I've done, particularly the other good thing for me, was the fact that I studied Buddhism and Taoism. So the culture and the philosophy behind it was very useful, because even in Tai Chi lineages, you will rarely find a good philosopher.
Really?
Yeah. Well, just go through the history of the Yang family. You know, a lot of them had problems with alcohol, food, committed suicide, beat each other, and so on. So it's not like you're following a system of gurus and philosophers, and probably Chen Manqing was the main philosopher in the Yang family because he was a calligrapher and a poet, but he was the only one.
Mm.
And so what I did, I put together, these are the most important things. If you're going to do a martial art, the first thing, the words that we always use is character development. Everyone puts it in their adverts and virtually no one does it. And they talk about emotional intelligence is really important because, you know, what's power without control? So when you look at the structure, particularly Yang family Tai Chi was perfect for me. So by being able to start with the meditation, being able to teach people posture, breathing, you know, calm the body, calm the emotions, calm the mind before you start training, and then being able to sensitize your mind to your internal energy, your life force, if you like, being able to actually directly feel it is really important. Otherwise, you're talking about something that you don't even know, that you haven't experienced for yourself. So the meditation part, and then the standing postures for the yin and the yang aspects, so that you develop, you know, patience, kindness, tolerance, compassion, as the soft front, and then the strong back, of course, is the idea to have resolve, determination, courage, strength. You know, how one supports the other. So I teach that right from the start, right from the off, because it makes good students.
Yeah.
Students that pay attention, students that listen and students that can see the logic to what we're doing. Then we do the Qigong, and the Qigong is teaching them how to sensitize, store and release energy. Mm. So they're a set of exercises that go through all the power lines of the body and how the energy is stored, you know, how you can stimulate it, store it, release it. And then from the exercises, then we start the form. Then we start Tai Chi, you know. So I think it's the structure. And then with the Tai Chi form, we start with monk style. Nice. In other words, passive. Because if you don't have a freedom of movement in your body, if you're trying too hard and you're being tense and so on. So just to get good, you know, all the things I've just said, plus the ability to be able to put it into technique and movement. So that's monk style. And then we move into warrior style, where we take the dynamics so that, you know, being able to stimulate, store, release, and instead of doing it to foster the energy inside of you, the idea of being able to then transmit it into your environment and into an opponent and so on. So then we add in push hands, double-edged sword, broadsword, spear. You really move from what most people would call Tai Chi into Yang family Kung Fu. Bearing in mind that Tai Chi was Kung Fu.
Yes, yes. Sorry if I'm being quiet. I'm just taking it all in, listening. Yeah. I'm having my geek moment here now, everybody. So people are listening and goes, Chris is very quiet. He's not usually this quiet. I'm just taking it all in. No, it's brilliant. I'm just sitting and taking it all in. I just love to absorb knowledge from people with more experience than me. It's amazing. Now, touching on all that now, at the moment, it's fair to say the internet and social media can be such a source of positivity and its ability to connect people. But at the same time, it can also enable people to foster some interesting opinions, not always based out of any experience, just more kind of following
everyone has line. A voice.
Everyone's saying it. Well, they're all saying it, so it must be true. And one of the big things, especially on Instagram at the moment, is people are posting up all these different videos of different self-proclaimed, maybe they genuinely are experts in martial arts field, using these different, how do you describe it, debatable, should we say, self-defense approaches, you know, blasting people across the room and then flying over the things. And I wondered if that's a help or a hindrance, if you have people that will question, you know, because I think people are starting to maybe get the idea that chi is this thing. Oh, that's the thing that people talk about on Instagram, where the guy goes flying like something from Star Wars.
Yeah.
Do you come across that from time to time with people, or is that something that
all
people
of the time.
All of the time?
Yeah. Wow. There's just always someone that wants to talk about these people that bounce everyone across the room, and you know, they touch their leg or their body and suddenly they're flying off. And to be honest, when you look at most of the things, it's street theatre, it's circus, you know. That's always going to be in the martial arts. And bear in mind that in Chinese martial arts particularly came from Chinese opera.
Yes.
Theatre, street theatre, gymnastics, trickery, setting fire to pieces of paper with your mind, and all this stuff that, you know, we now see from magicians in the West. That is common. I suppose you'd call it trickery, but you need skill to be able to do a trick.
Yes.
So I think
it's a fair point.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it's theatre. So I accept it. If you think that that kind of magic is true, good luck on you.
I like it. But I mean, it's always been something that I've seen. And you look and go, well, no, I don't believe that for a second. But then I think back to those experiences I had as a teenager, when I say, like, I was very aware of my hands, my palms, my feet, the sensation of heat. I remember we were doing a breathing exercise. Forgive me, I don't know the name. And they were describing the feel of the pull and the push and the energy. And I'm thinking, I can feel that. And I remember I wasn't freaked out by it, but I was like, I can, I'm aware of this.
Yes.
Energy, this push and this pull. It was not like a positive negative magnet feeling. Yeah. It was odd.
Because you were doing an exercise to sensitize your mind to your energy. Mm. And I mean, we briefly talked about the video I put up the other day.
Yes. You know,
to me, and this is my opinion, whatever anybody else thinks, I don't care, but Qi, in my experience, is a collection of energies. Mm. When you look at the original calligraphy for Qi, it was breath coming out of a mouth. And most people, one of the advantages that I've also had is because I've written for magazines for 50 years,
yeah.
And I've interviewed so many masters in their field. And then, you know, when I was younger, my first question was, what's Qi, what's Qi,
yeah.
What's prana, you know. Yeah. And most of them would just say, well, it's breath, it's air. You know, if you don't breathe, then you're dead. You know, or I've had some of them say things like, Qi is the lightning in the sky and various vague references. But actually, when you look at it, then from its breath coming out of the mouth, and then they added a rice pot with heat coming off of it.
Mm.
So the calligraphy for Qi is the rice pot with heat coming off of it, but it's also the mouth and the breath and the air. And it's basically saying, you know, the food you eat, the heat you add, the oxygen that you add, animates the body. That's what gives you your life force.
Yeah.
That life force that comes from basically food and movement and breathing and so on, then goes into your blood, it goes into the oxygen in your blood, it goes into the lymph system, it goes into the neural system, it goes into the internal organs.
Mm.
It's energy that animates the body and makes it work. So so the word Qi to me is it's a collective. If you can harmonize those energies and it also goes very much with the mind, the emotions, and movement. They're all contributory parts of it. So when you're moving, when we talk about Qi or Ki, when you're doing martial arts, basically, can you harmonize your mind, your emotions, your breath, the movement of the body, the internal functions of the body? Can you make them all come together? And the better you can make them come together, the more powerful your animation is, the way you animate your body.
Mm.
So the video that I did that we were talking about earlier, I was talking about Yi being intention and Qi. So if you accept that as Qi, then your intention, if you break down, because everyone says, oh, the Yi leads to Qi. It was said to me so many times, you know, intention leads to Qi. And I thought I got that.
Yeah.
I thought, therefore I knew it. But the reason that I've called my new book Icebergs Instead of Mountains is because it's the same thing, but it goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Mm. So it's not like you're learning different things. You're getting more depth into what you're learning. So when, with my brain, when I studied intention, you know, what is intention? When you look at intention, these are the qualities that you need. You need awareness because that brightens it.
Mm.
You need focus because that collects it.
Yeah.
You need sensitivity, because if you're not sensitive to your energy, you ain't going to feel it anyway.
Yep.
And you need intensity, and intensity is born out of emotion. And if your emotion is anger or fear, it's going to be negative. But if you've developed emotional intelligence, it's power.
Yeah.
So when you look at it, that's what intention is. Because I was looking at students and thinking, they all look like they've got headache. You know, the way they're moving, it's like, where's the power? And it's all very well shouting internal power and your Yi leads your Qi. No one understood it. So I needed to break it down for my own students when I'm teaching them. And like I said, bearing in mind that most of my students have been doing martial arts for 40 odd years, you know, they know what they're looking at.
Yeah.
So I had to break down, look, you know, let's break down what intention is. What qualities have you got to develop in your mind? Awareness, focus, sensitivity, and intensity. We do this through meditation.
Mm.
We then do this through the standing postures, and we develop emotional intelligence. Then we put it into the exercises. Then we put it into the form. So by looking in intention and energy, they're inseparable. Like the yin yang thing, you can't see it, but up behind. You can't have one without the other. You can't have energy unless your mind and your emotions and everything is in the right place. and then your ability to be able to collect it. And we all understand that. There's nothing mystical in that, is there? There's nothing magical. It's quite normal.
Yeah.
It's just that if you're a good coach, you can break it down and explain it in its normal terms. Basically, you're just explaining the trick.
I love that. Amazing. So this wasn't originally on my thinking for today, but now we've gone down this, not rabbit hole, but conversation. Would you share your thoughts on energy healing as a thing? Because I share an experience I have.
Oh, yeah. I can't do that.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Well, I can imagine. But carry on. Yeah.
Okay. The only reason I ask it is years ago, I went to, out of curiosity, there was an advert in one of the newspapers that I'm going to go for a Reiki healer. And I thought, do you know what? I'm interested. I'm going to go. And I was actually in a different, I was in Chester at the time, living with my girlfriend at the time. This is going back over 20 years. And I remember I went in and they didn't know who I was. There was no way they could know who I was or what I did. And they started and I remember this lady said to me, she said, oh, my nose, my eyes are running and everything. And I was like, okay. She says, do you anything working with energy? You know, do you a martial artist or anything like that? And I'm like, hang on a minute. How did you know that then? That's a bit weird. And so that I always remember to this day thinking, wow, what was that all about then? How did they know that? Just coming from the conversation, listening to you talking then about what you were sharing. So, yeah, I just wondered what your thoughts were. And
firstly, it's about arousal.
Right.
You know, so when you're talking about Reiki, I was the Reiki master back in the 1970s, you know.
Okay.
And like everything else, it's become a circus again.
Yeah.
But when you look at it in terms of everything that we've described to do with chi and energy and so on, we know as martial artists that you've got your peripersonal space, you've got your reach out and touch space.
Mm.
And science has said when anyone enters into that space, you become aroused.
Yeah.
Obviously, if they're a lovely, nice looking person, you get aroused one way.
Yeah.
And if they're a frightening person, you get aroused in a different way.
Yeah.
But what it does is that the moment somebody comes into your personal space, which is why if we're in a queue or something, we have to shut it all down to be, but it's always uncomfortable standing close to somebody.
Mm.
And so that's the first thing, right? So we know from a martial arts point of view, the fight starts when you touch.
Yeah.
So the fight starts when your hand meets whatever with the other person. And that's when they've come into your personal space. From a self-defense point of view, that's what I teach. The fight starts when you touch. The fight starts at this point. And this is where you've got to be able to deal with it. But you've got to be able to deal with your arousal in the right way as well, so that you don't panic or become too aggressive or frightened or whatever. From a healing point of view, it works in the other way, that if you and the healer are in sync with each other,
right,
if you are both looking for the same objective. In Kung Fu, we say when your chi is in harmony. There's a thing called Chap Sao. I don't know whether you know, you probably don't know, but it's like, it basically translates as hand fiddling, which doesn't sound good under the present environment, but but what it means is that a senior instructor can adjust the student to the point that everything connects in the body. Sometimes right. They're tiny little bits, 1 millimeter even. You know that when the hand folds, it's only when it gets to a point like here that the wrist sets the elbow, which sets the shoulder, which comes into the spine, and then so on to connect down through the body. But if your chi's in harmony, it works. If your chi's not in harmony, then it doesn't work, because either you seize up because it's your instructor, or you go floppy. You know what it's like. You go to adjust somebody and they suddenly just go, put the hands down and go floppy, or they go stiff. But when you can work together, that's a good thing. In healing, it's the same way. If you're both there for the same objective, and the person that's doing the healing is a nice person, a cultured, developed person, they've got a good energy, and you want to be healed, right? Then when they come into your personal space, it's going to have a positive healing effect. The important thing is they're giving about 10% and you're giving 90%. You're healing yourself, basically. Right. But they're influencing your ability to heal yourself. And if you're convincing yourself, so like what you said, you know, I felt this in my hands.
Yeah.
So if I put my hand above your back, you will put your mind into your back and you will feel it.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's not that they're sending their energy to you. You get a lot of these Chiron healers, you know, they're kind of wounded healers. They take on your illness or your sickness or whatever. It's a load of crap. Yeah, basically, you know, if somebody who is a good person, a cultured person, they've got good energy, they put their hand close to you, it will stimulate you. It will stimulate your mind. And if your body can heal itself, it will.
Amazing.
So Reiki can be a very positive thing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's been taken over by a lot of people that are very arrogant and so on as well.
Yeah. Interesting. So it's more of a gentle push, I suppose.
Which is why then in Tai Chi, Neigong and Qigong, that's what we're doing. It's diagnostic and we heal ourselves through meditation, sensing ourselves to our energy. We do specific sets of exercise that go through all the movements of the body. So we will pick up if there's anything that's stiff or wrong or awkward. And if it's possible for us to heal it ourselves, it's not always possible. But if we can, then we do. You know, we send our energy there, soften, relax the tissue and so on.
Amazing. And I'm this is becoming totally indulgent now. It's just me asking questions for me.
I think it's interesting for other people as well.
Absolutely. No, but I was going to ask is, I've heard you speak before on definitely on mindfulness and your journey that you've had personally with your, I mean, God, it makes me feel a bit bad when I have a little bit of a moan that my knee hurts and my back's a bit sore. But if there's some of the troubles that you've had to go through and the way that you've dealt with it and turned it into a, well, not turned it into a positive, that maybe doesn't come across right, but the way that you've been able to deal with it and through this mindfulness and this way that you're thinking about it,
yeah.
I found really interesting because the first time I came across anything, I mean, it's not even a grain of sand in regards to the problems that you've had to deal with, but I had I've had a long-standing knee issue that for over 10 years. And I had the surgery when I was 29 and they said, look, you maybe get 5 years out of this and it'll need replacing, but we won't replace it because you're not old enough at 20. I'm in my 30s. Anyway, I carried on as it was. And thank goodness it had been okay up until 2 years ago. And another issue developed and slowly but surely it was sort of preventing me from doing a lot of things that I would normally take for granted. And whilst I was waiting for surgery and I'd reached a point where even sitting down was uncomfortable, getting up to walk, I had to prepare myself to take every step and it was really not great. One thing that I wasn't prepared for was what that was going to do to my head. I'd always just presumed I'll occupy myself with something else, I'll be fine. But it was the first time that I could remember since a child that I wasn't able to train. And initially, I was just fidgety, so I'd do other things. But I found myself, I stopped this podcast. I lost interest I didn't want to watch martial arts. I didn't want to read about it. If a fight came on, whether it was boxing or anything, I did not want to watch it. Just totally disengaged. And I caught myself and thought, hang on a minute, what is going on here? I don't know whether it was a chemical shift in my brain because I wasn't physically training or but listening to you speak on what you spoke about, I thought, you know, I've never thought about this until this happened to me.
Yeah.
And then there's something that I've tried to arm myself with now more and more for the inevitable day that something else comes along, because I'm not getting any younger. More things are going to break. This is going to happen again. And it's actually something that I've now started speaking with my students on, saying, you know, you've got to prepare, you've got to arm your mind as well, you know, to deal with these things that are going to come along. And I just wondered if you'd share a little bit about how you've developed that in yourself, because I think it's a really important thing for a lot of people listening, whether you're 25, 35, 45, 55, you need to think about it.
You know, to cut a very long story short, and I don't want to sound whingy or moany about it, because I get on my own nerves. But in 2007, they decided that I should have a bilateral knee replacement. It's both done at the same time. And I got home and I fell over. And when I fell over, I didn't realise it, but when they do the knee replacement, they cut the muscles and stitch them back again. Yeah. And the muscles severed on both legs. And I was in terrible pain. And I kept going back to the consultant and saying, I'm in terrible pain. This is, and he kept saying, oh, you've had two knees replaced. What's the matter with you? And so on. And it went on for years. And it wasn't until 5 years later, that was in 2007, 2013, I went to see another consultant. And he just took one look and said, you haven't got any quads in your leg. You have no, you've got one quad in each leg. That's all you got. And he said, how the hell do you even stand up? And luckily, because of my training with my balance and so on, you know, I'd been able to cope with it. But he sent me to a specialist in London, and he said, let's try and fix it. And the muscles were dead. I mean, it's a stupid thing, really, when I look back on it. Yeah. But when he said, if you want to have a go, I'll have a go. Silly me. Let's try it. You know, 2 5-hour surgeries of trying to stretch the muscles from my groin down to my knee and secure them. Neither of them worked. And I got sepsis in my right leg for the first time in 2013. And I nearly died. I was in hospital for 5 months, intravenous antibiotics, all that kind of stuff. Got over that. And they did various knee replacements with antibiotic spacers and all this kind of stuff. It was very serious. And then in 2015, I was coming home from the Czech Republic and I collapsed and rushed to hospital again. That was really serious. It was so bad that at one point, because it was an NHS hospital they rushed me to, that I had to discharge. I was at death's door, literally. I had 3 or 4 cleaning out surgeries and various bits and pieces, and they really didn't know what they were doing. I mean, really didn't know. So in the end, I pulled out all the tubes, phoned Will Henshaw and said, come and get me. And Will, luckily, took me to the private hospital. The consultant there got the wife in and said, you know, we've got to try and save his life first. And that's, you know, there's not much chance of that. But me being me, luckily, I managed to live again. And that was when I wrote my first book, The Warrior's Mind.
Yeah.
I wrote it on my iPhone in hospital, published it through Amazon while I was in hospital.
Wow.
I thought I was dying. Everybody told me I was dying, so that was going to be my legacy. So for 52 days, I did a meditation and wrote a poem each day, published it on a book. And
that was powerful stuff.
Problem was, I lived.
Yeah. How do you follow that up?
It was a bit hard. It was a bit difficult. So that was what prompted me to set up the Tai Chi coaching program, which was the best thing I ever did. Collecting loads of really great martial artists, coming together to train, learn, develop, and add Tai Chi into all their various arts was absolutely brilliant. Literally best thing I ever did. But anyway, what they did in 2015 is they took the knee out in the end completely, and they put an iron bar right through my leg, so it was locked straight.
Yeah.
And then by 2021, the iron bar started to come through the bone in the sheen, and I got sepsis again. So I went to see the consultant, and the consultant basically said to me, go home, dial 999 to get your leg amputated or you will be dead. And that's what I had to do. And once again, so I had my leg amputated. I'm trying to get through this as fast as I can. There's only one little bit left. So they amputated my leg. I was in hospital for 5 months during COVID. You can imagine what that was like. And I was having the last blood test to make sure that the sepsis and that had gone, and they found cancer.
I knew you were going to say that.
So now my nickname is Lucky.
Yeah.
Just well, suppose it is in a way.
Yeah.
Bad luck, isn't it? But yeah, so then that started the treatment for cancer. But, you know, luckily, I'm in remission. I've got a blood test in the next couple of weeks, actually. But, I think your question was, how do I deal with all
yeah,
that?
Yeah, how do you stay present in mind and not let yourself fall into what could be? I mean, it would be easy and understandable for a person to fall into a very deep depressive state and never come out of it with all of that shit going on. Excuse my language.
I had to work a lot, but
yeah,
I did my Tai Chi every day. All the time I was in hospital, I did it laying down in bed. I did it seated on the side of the bed. I did it in a wheelchair. And of course, ever since, I've had to do it sitting down. But I've always trained at least twice a day, once in the morning and once in the afternoon. And I have meditated every day. And that, honestly, that is the reason that I'm still here. And the Qigong exercises develop your vigor. They develop your qi. They develop your energy. So it is really that development of vigor and energy that has kept that intensity in my mind. So it's kept my intentions always strong. You know, it's do or die, isn't it? You know, there's nothing in between. If you want to stop me, you've got to kill me. And that's the attitude that you've got to take.
Wow. I mean, it's... thinking back now on some of the things you were talking about, you know, early days, some of the training that you went through, the experiences you had with the firefighters and security, I think it's fair to say you've always been of a very strong mindset. And it sounds to me like the training that you've done, you've been able to harness that and control it and focus it and go, right, now this is what we need to do. Let's put it all in this. Now this is what we need to do. Let's put it all in this. And almost compartment, I can never say that word.
I can't either.
Yeah, you know, everyone knows the one I'm trying to compartmentalize. That way, you've been able to put it into sections. There we go. We'll say that. You've been able to go, okay, now this is the challenge. Now this is the challenge. Now this is the challenge. And keep it together. And I mean, that is.
But there is a way. One of the great things with Buddhism and Zen is being present in the moment. So, two things, you know, one, don't look back.
Right.
Because if I look back, I get very depressed with all the things that have happened. And the second one is don't look forwards. Let things come to you.
I love that.
And deal with them. So, in a way, whereas if you look at a lot of the memes and things on social media these days, it's get off your ass and go and do this and drive. And if you think it, you can do it. You can see, even to today, I put up, here's another one of these shit memes. That actually is so misleading, it's untrue.
Yeah.
So ignore them, because actually sometimes you need to do the opposite. You know, if you're old, it doesn't mean to say that you've got to be a gym rat. Some people are very lucky, they've got good DNA, they've got good genetics, they've managed to maintain a healthy life. Other people have had cancer, you know, they've had sickness, they've had disabilities, either mental, physical, whatever. Not everyone can do, you know, they're looking down on people. Do you want to be this guy in the wheelchair, or do you want to be this guy, you know, who's like this kind of stuff? And that's wrong. They shouldn't do that. And like I say, don't look back. There was a great scene in Vikings with Ragnar Lothbrok, when his sons were going with him into battle and on the boat, and one of the kids turns around to look at his mum, and he puts his hand on his head and he turns it around and he said, don't look back, you ain't going that way.
I love that.
And I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the other side of it is that if you're always looking forwards, if you're ambitious or whatever, you're on a road to being unhappy. Be happy now. Like, don't worry about that. Be happy wherever you are, accept it. Whatever you can do in that moment or that day, do it. You know, do what you can to improve things, but you need to let life come to you. The thing about time is you don't pass through time. Time passes through you, and you're always in the present. And that's a really important point.
Wow. I because this is this all day for hours on end.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm just trying to think. My mind's gone all to mush. I'm just listening. I feel like I'm on a coaching call. Like I'm on a life coaching call. But no.
Let me just, one of the things that comes out of that actually, and is an advert from books as well.
Go for it.
So after I had my leg amputated, And that was in 2021. And by the time then I got cancer. So in the last 12 months, I've written three books.
Okay.
And I've written three books. I've never had any intention of writing another book. I wrote that one with the poems and I thought that was going to be it. I was never going to write another book. But what happened was one just rose up inside of me. So The Soft Front and Strong Back came about because as the interesting discussion that we're having today, I think I had something important to say that nobody else could say. So it's a mix of an autobiography, just a little bit, but more about how I discovered my philosophy and how I used it, particularly through those really hard times, because a lot of people go through hard times and they just fall to pieces. So I felt that I could say things to help them. So I wrote the Soft Front, Strong Back book about my philosophy. And to be honest, I wrote that in about 5 days. It just rose up inside of me and I just, and it was done. And then I said, right, I'm never going to write another book.
Until.
And the publisher said to me, oh, that was brilliant, that book, Steve. You've got to do another one. And I go, well, not really. And he said, well, you wrote two books with Toru Takamizawa, Concepts of Karate. Would you like to do something about that? And I thought about it. And I thought, actually, I owe Toru a lot. He was a good friend and he taught me a lot and he was very influential in karate in the UK and none of his ex-students talk about him, which I found really odd. I tried to get in touch with Toru's family to say, you know, I want to republish these books. I don't mind if the money goes to you or whatever. No one answered. Talked to students, not interested. His ex-students, not interested. So I thought, okay, in that case, what I'll do is I'll take the books and put them together. So I did that, but there wasn't enough. By the time, because Toru had one of those brains that he was a super genius, you know, everything was charts and translations and, you know, to be honest, no one would read it, you know. But he did have a lot of very, very interesting concepts of movement and technique that I still use now, even in my Tai Chi, because it's relevant in any martial art. So what I thought I'd do, I'd combine that with what it did for me. So I wrote the book Concepts of Karate, the concepts of Toru Takamizawa and Steve Rowe. Obviously, I published those books with him. They were published under the name of Takro, Takamizawa and Rowe. And there was a lot of really good information in there. So I did that. I basically wrote about his concepts and what that had done for me. The result of all those years later, how I'm still using them, in maybe in a slightly different way, but it's still his. And you know what came out of that for me as well was a lot of ideas I thought I'd had that were my own. And then I thought I had bragging rights because I'd invented this and thought of that. Actually, I realised when I wrote the book, they didn't, they came from him.
Wow.
And so that was why I wrote that book. And then I said, I'm not going to write another book. And then several people come to me and said, Steve, you've got so much to say about Tai Chi that you won't find anywhere else, you know, so it's unique. You really need to do this. And I was sort of saying, no, no, no. People got to come to me and learn, you know, I'm not interested in writing a book. But then one, I don't know, just kind of welled up inside. And again, I wrote that book twice the size of the other books in about 5 or 6 days. And I took 100 to 200 photographs as well. So that book is twice as big and it's got a load of photographs, colour photographs of that in it. That comes out in a couple of weeks. But so that was how I think it's important that all of us old dogs that have something to say, put it out there. And I was talking to Alfie Lewis in the same way, you know. I'm always encouraging Alfie, you've really got to put your... I'm so happy that he still posts. I know he's an unusual character and everything else, but isn't that good?
Yeah, absolutely it is. I really enjoy his posts. And I think
for people like Alfie, Vince Morris, you know, they've all got interesting things to talk about and they've got the direct experience as well.
Yeah.
We're the people that need to be putting stuff out there. That's why I post every day.
Yeah.
and also why I wrote the books and do videos and podcasts like this, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting that, because I actually interviewed Alfie a couple of years ago, and it was through one of his students, Thomas Dodd, who I'd gotten to know through working with him on various film productions. Yeah, and we got talking about martial arts and stuff, as you do when you're on jobs, and you know, I said to, you know, would you like to come on my podcast and we'll have a conversation like this? And then it was him that actually spoke to Alfie and said, look, you know, you should go on this guy's podcast, and he agreed to it. And I remember, I think he said at the time it was like one of the first interviews he'd done in something like 20 years, and I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah. I was so nervous going into that interview. So nervous. I had all these notes, and I was thinking, you know, I can't make any mistakes, and you know, because he comes with a reputation, you know, and I didn't want to be that guy that lost my shit with the interview with Alfie Lewis.
Yeah.
And it ended up being one of the most, and this is no exaggeration, most relaxed, enjoyable interviews I had ever done.
Yeah.
It was so nice.
He's a lovely, easygoing, friendly guy.
So knowledgeable, just calming.
He's been everywhere and done everything, you know?
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
And I came out of that interview so rejuvenated and calm.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I was a bag of nerves going into it, but I had a lot of emails from people saying, I can't understand what he's saying, but...
Well, I was going to say, it's difficult to hear with the Liverpudlian accent, and I'm terrible with accents as well.
Yeah.
But the cover photograph of my first book, The Warrior's Mind book, was taken in his place. We did I did a seminar there.
Amazing, amazing. Listen, I could carry on doing this all day. I think what we need to do is book a part 2, 3, 4, and 5 and just make this a whole series of podcasts, because I'm very aware of the time. It's been over an hour already. Thank you for your time. I really, you know, this is valuable content. As you say, it's important that we document this sort of stuff. And I know our listeners are really, really going to appreciate it. So, you know, thank you for taking the time. You've done your plugs as well, so I'm glad. I usually finish with that. If you've got anything you'd like to share with anybody. And where can people find them? We'll ask that. Can they search for them on Amazon? Do you have a website? Did you just contact yourself?
Basically everywhere. They're on Amazon.
Yep.
If they go on my blog, which is steve-rowe.com, everything's on there.
Okay.
The details of my coaching program, my Tai Chi coaching program, is on there as well. I'm recruiting for next year, 2015.
I'll have a look at that, you know. I
might 25, not 15, 2025.
I do this all the time. I'm terrible. I have to check what year it is now when I'm writing things down, because you don't write checks anymore. So I'm always like, 20... What year is it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
3, 4. Anyway, time's flying by. I'll include all the information in the show notes, guys. Yeah. So there's people listening in. If you're struggling to find it, just go in the show notes. I'll go and look for you, and I'll include all the links so you can go and find it. But yeah, Steve, thank you. I really, really appreciate it. And it's nice that we've got to have this chat as well.
It's been too long.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.
Support our podcast by making your Art Marshall orders via the link in our show notes. Art Marshall.
Art Marshall.
Streetwear inspired by martial arts culture.
So there you have it, guys. I'm sure you'd agree that was an awesome conversation. I didn't have to do very much, to be fair. It was easy in that respect, but you know, speaking to somebody of Steve's experience, you know, I alluded to it earlier in the conversation. You know, I could have given him all day, and we could have filled it. You know, this is a person that's had a huge amount of experience. You know, we didn't really touch on, you know, his experience teaching and training around the world. You know, all the work that he did in Europe, and such an experienced individual, and somebody that, I don't know about you guys, but I can actually sit and listen to him all day. You know, actually, Steve, if you're listening to this, you should do an audiobook. I know that you're keen on writing your books, and you should do an audiobook. In fact, you could convert one of your current books into an audiobook. I'd listen to that, and I'm sure a lot of other people would. You have a very very calming voice.
but with a very, you know, very interesting content. So there you go. There's a business venture for you. I've just put forward. Just do an audiobook. I'll do the intro for it. There you go. What have I just done? Anyway, I'd also, a little bit of housekeeping. I'd like to say a big thank you to our sponsors. So to SGC Security Services, to Mitmaster.com, to Art Marshall, and to Marshallytics. Please do make sure you go over to the show notes and check out these guys. Without their support, we wouldn't have this podcast. Also, a big thank you to our Patreons, who, you know, just by simply being part of the Patreon group are helping out, you know, with perks starting as little as £1 a month. There's loads of different options there for you to get involved, and you get early access to the podcasts, the episodes as they go out. Also, what I'm about to do now as well, we give you a little shout out, we give you a little thanks for your support. So in no particular order, I'd like to say a thank you to Simon Wales, to Claire King, to Phil S, to Paul MacArthur, to Daniel David Thomas, and to Mark Davis, and last but no means least, to our good friend Baz. So thank you to those guys. They all donated to the Tier 2 package, so they get an extra special shout out on the episode. If you're interested in getting involved, if you head over to patreon.com/kickbackwithchris, or all the details are there. Please, as always, you know, don't forget, one of the biggest things you can do with these podcasts is share the links. Just share them away on social media when you see them. For some reason, Facebook has suddenly decided that it hates SoundCloud links. It thinks SoundCloud is trying to take over the world in some sort of Terminator 2 fashion, like Skynet or something. I don't know why. So if you share the... just to save yourself from getting grief with your account, if you share the... Spotify or the iTunes links, then you know you're safe with that one. But anyway, I'm going to leave it there because I am rapidly losing my voice. It's been a really busy day today. Lots of interviews, lots of conversations. I'd just like to close out by saying a big thanks to Steve Rowe. Please do go to the show notes and check out all the links to all of his different work. There's the books in there, there's the websites, there's courses, there's everything. So yeah, go check that out and give him some love. All right, guys, thanks again. Catch up with you very soon. We will have our matchup episodes next week, and as well we will have our second episode of Fight Scene Friday with Mr. Martin Wan. We are going to be visiting a Jet Li classic. That's all I'm going to say for now, but more information will be released very soon. All right, guys, thanks again. Have a great weekend, and I'll speak to you soon.
Brought to you by www.mitmaster.com.